Just let you know what this is the last Marine Conservation Council little lunch and learn. And oh, here comes the chicken.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you here, Pete.
Thank you.
This is a constituent of ours from Homer, very active in Marine Conservation Council. And marine bycatch of Chinook salmon is an impact in all Alaskans. I think we're just getting our arms around that. Hopefully we get the support we need to get our fish back home. And I'm looking forward very much to these presentations. So thanks for being here today.
We thank you for arranging the room for us. I know it's hard, it's tough. So
thank you.
So appreciate the opportunity. I'm Pete Whedon, and I'm from Homer. And I've been involved with the Alaska Marine Conservation Council since its inception in 1995. Our family joined just because we thought it looked like they were doing good work and made sense to us. So since then, I've been fairly active with them. In recent years, I was on their board for 5 years. And the organization's made up of all your groups. I don't know if we have any trawlers in our group because one of our programs is the Senator mentioned was reducing bycatch, and but every other deer group, including sport fishermen and all the different commercial fisheries in Alaska, are members of our organization. Our board members come from all over the state, from southeast to western Alaska. And in fact, I'd like to introduce one of our board members, Brian DeLay, that lives in Juneau, but he fishes in Bristol Bay. And that it's an indication of our diversity. AMCC, we get involved in all kinds of issues, all marine issues. We don't really get involved in the land-based salmon habitat things, although that concerns us. We're active in the marine part of fisheries management. We're well respected. By the way, I have a PowerPoint up here that I'm not going to try to follow. So you guys can just look at the slides as we go, and I'm going to tell you about our organization. I'm going to put up a bunch of pictures of our members, and if I can figure out how to do all this good. We have a little slideshow that'll show a lot of pictures of fishing and our members here. I'm kind of a mat guy, so this is kind of awkward for me, but looks like we might have got it rolling. This is crab, and you're enjoying some crab today from Kodiak. This is how you're supposed to catch crab, and this slide shows you how you shouldn't. And this is the only bad slide I have in this presentation. The rest of these are happy pictures. I'm down here in Juneau trying to raise awareness about Chinook bycatch. As most of you know, Chinook are in trouble. We've got a lot of stocks all over the state. They're depressed, and a lot of rivers are listed as rivers of concern. And so bycatch is something that's a very small component to the problem, but it's something we can control. It's something that if we say something about, we can get reductions from the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. That's my granddaughter there. Right now there's a motion on the table at the North Council that Commissioner Campbell offered in December. We're trying to get a cap on the last fishery in the Gulf of Alaska that isn't capped on Chinook bycatch, and that's the non-pollock fisheries. And those are, like flathead sole, yellowfin sole, arrowtooth flounder, cod, all the bottom fish that are caught in trawls that there's no cap. They can catch all the Chinook they want and not get stopped. So we want to place a cap, and we're advocating for the 5,000 option. There's several alternatives on the table. We'd like to see the lowest one possible. And we'd like to, part of the motion is full retention of all Chinook salmon so that they would have to bring them in. And this would enable us to get tissue samples so that we can continue the program of river of origin genetic studies. Right now, the state's sitting on about 4,000 samples that have not been read. And during our hearing yesterday, we heard Fish and Game say that bycatch of Chinook in the Gulf was from the Pacific Northwest, Canada, and Southeast Alaska. But we know that the fish that are from the Gulf of Alaska rivers are in that bycatch. We know that. And we just need to, we need the river of origin research, and we need to determine where these are coming from. This would help the trawl industry too, because they do want to reduce their bycatch. It's not something that they go out and, you know, maliciously go out to catch Chinook. They want to catch these other fish. And so we want to help them. And I think that I've given an example when I've talked to a couple different trawl captains. I'm not friends with a lot of them, but I do know a couple. And I told them, when I'm trolling for kings in my little boat in Kachemak Bay, and I start catching pollock, I move. I don't want to burn the bait catching pollock. So that's what I do, and I tell them, that's what I want you to do when you know that you're into a hot spot for Chinook salmon, we want you to move. And one way, one incentive, you know, when we go to these meetings, and that's something AMCC has been to every council meeting there is. We've always had staff there. We have one of our outreach coordinator in Kodiak is on the AP, so we're, you know, we kind of have an insider that keeps us posted on what's going on there. And so we have good relations with the North Council, and we know that this council that's seated right now seems to really want to reduce bycatch. This seems to be our time, and so. We're just trying to raise awareness on it. We'd like that motion to get passed, and we want that lowest cap. And so what we're asking the legislature to represent all the people of Alaska and to tell the council that, because if some of you have been to council meetings, we have six members, Alaska members, but there's also representatives there from the NIMS and Natural Marine Fisheries Service, and Washington and Oregon have seats. And so that's where a lot of these votes come from. So we don't have the whole council, and we really need to speak out and say this is something we want. And that's what we're asking the legislature to do. That vote there and that crab you just saw and the crab you're enjoying today came from one of Alaska Marine Conservation Council's favorite programs called Catch of the Season. And it started years ago. We tried to get fish from all over the state and different little fisheries and send it all over the country. But it just was a real cumbersome program, and we pulled back. We just couldn't afford to do it. It wasn't, the shipping is what killed us, frankly. And so we've morphed it into a different little program we call Catch of the Season. And now that we're using Kodiak crab as our kind of mainstay of this program. And so what happens is we have fishermen that are members of our council that subscribe to our conservation ethics, and we give them a little more money for their crab than what they would get at the dock. And we have subscribers. If you were a member of ANCC, you would have got an email alert saying that this is going to happen and this is what it would cost. And so we had we had 100 subscribers in Anchorage, and we had about 100 in, it went to 250 households, seven restaurants, and Princess Tours ordered 5,000 pounds. So we sold 10,000 pounds of crab out of Kodiak a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you guys remember watching the news during the whole Kulik incident. The crabbers were very nervous. They were loading their pots. They were getting ready to prosecute their fishery, and the Kulik was on the rocks down there at Sikkalik Island, and that was right in the area where the Tanner crab opening is. There was only two of the nine districts open this year, and that was right where it was. And so everybody was pretty nervous about that whole incident. But as it turned out, we all got real lucky. And the fishery, although slow, usually that fishery in recent years has only lasted a couple, 3 days. There's 60 boats that participate. They're limited to 20 pots. They're still fishing. There's still guys scratching. They're having trouble finding fish because, or crab, because the crab are becoming depleted. It's a tough deal. So anyway, that crab that you're eating is Cape and Kodiak, part of our catch and season program, and hopefully it's pretty good. The king salmon that some of the lunches had, or maybe they all had a little bit of the king salmon, that came from Nancy Hillstrand on Homer. Cold Point Trading Company. She's a longtime member of AMCC and a huge supporter and a very passionate warrior against bycatch. So she donated that king salmon for our lunch today for that. And so another program that AMCC is working on right now is the Alaska Jig Association. And what we're looking for is to try to get a small part of the cod quota in the Gulf of Alaska dedicated to small boat entry level fishery like the jig fishery. And it's a really robust thing. Right now they're sort of hampered because of low prices. As you know, or you probably heard, the Icelandic cod have come back and it's on the market. So Alaska cod, which was kind of king last few years, is the price is down. So it's gonna be tough for those guys. Fuel prices are high and but we're supporting that to set aside some of that Pacific cod quota for that fishery because jig fishing is a very low impact, like I say, entry level fishery that anybody, like I did when I came to Alaska, could just enter and not spend $1 million to get into and actually become a fisherman. So we really support that sort of thing. And the catch of the season is a good example of how AMCC helps, you know, gives those fishermen a leg up. We were hoping to do something catch of the season in cod to kind of help get that price up a little bit for them, and we might in the future. So with that, I'm just going to leave you with the idea that AMCC is here about bycatch. That's our main thing here in Juneau this year. Last year we came down and advocated for funding for ocean acidification research up at UAF, and we were successful in that program. Continues today with Dr. Mathis up there. It's an important thing. Ocean acidification, you're going to hear more about it in the years to come. It's a huge threat to all of us. So that's what we do. I would just say I'm glad to answer any questions we have. Go ahead.
So what has been done so far with king salmon bycatch? You mentioned that you have a whole bunch of samples. How was that done, and what do you expect the result to be?
There is observation in the Gulf right now. We had a restructured observer program. You probably read about it. We used to have 30% coverage on the large boats over 60 feet. In the new restructured program, we've now placed observers on the under 60 trawlers and on longliners. And what that did is it split the effort out amongst the fleet more. But we cut the observation of the large vessels, the ones that we really need to be watching. And so we're really happy with the new restructured observer program, but that's where these samples have come from. So there's a couple ways we get an observation in the Gulf. Part of it is an observer actually goes on board a boat, stays with them on that trip, and takes samples during the toast, you know, when they bring the fish aboard. You know, in the Gulf, it's not factory trawlers, it's catcher boats that go back to Kodiak and deliver. And so a lot of king salmon, and I've heard trawlers testify at the North Council telling the council that you guys realize these fish are only this big. You know, and those are hard to discern that from a pollock as they go down the spillway. So those aren't getting deck sorted. We know from, this is anecdotal, and we get crewmen that if their captain and owners knew that they told us things like this, they'd get fired. And they're not allowed to take pictures. That picture of trawl bycatch crab was a very unusual one. And that young man, when they found out that he released those, did get fired. And so these guys don't want anybody to know about this. That's why they fight cameras. You know, we keep saying, why don't we do video monitoring of these? So that's where those samples have come from in the plant. When the pollock is delivered to Kodiak, there's a NIMS observer in the plant, and he will look at that catch, and he'll separate those Chinook into a bin. He'll take tissue samples and take a sex, and he'll find out the sex, get a measurement, and get that sample, and that's those samples. Those those are the samples that we could learn something from. You know, we could find out where that fish came from.
Oh, just Pete, I appreciate you being here. I mean, this issue is important to all Alaskans. I happen to be a commercial salmon fisherman in Cook Inlet, but I come from a community that's a big sport fish community. Some folks represent sport fish communities, some folks represent commercial communities. Bycatch is something we should all be able to unite on. We think of the impacts, think about the impacts on the valley and the lack of fish that have come back there, as well as, you know, kings and rivers throughout the state of Alaska. What if we were able to reduce the impact, I mean, the intercept fisheries, bycatch of kings substantially, how many fish total are we talking about a year here that are being intercepted today?
Well, in the Gulf, in 2010, in the pollock fishery, we spiked at just under 55,000 Chinook. And that's the observed one. We know, because, and they'll even tell you this, when, in the pollock fishery anyway, and in the bottom, you know, non-pollock fishery, they'll do what they call observer tows. When they have an observer on board, they fish a different way. And when they're not observed, they fish it another way. And NIMS extrapolates the numbers from the observed. So you got 30% coverage, which is less now. It's more like 15 because of the new program. So they take that 15% sample and they extrapolate the rest of their trips. And that's how they come up with this whole number. But we know that those are kind of, that's kind of a stacked deck, because there's times when they're not observed. And I've talked to captains who said, when I know I have a dirty toe and I have an observer on board, I dump it. I just dump it before it gets to the ramp, doesn't get observed. The only way an observer can write something down and log it in is if he actually sees it and can touch it. He can't, he can be suspicious of that that just happened, but he can't write it down. It doesn't go into the record book. So we know these things happen, and so we're fearful that the numbers are a lot higher. But to get back to your question, in the Chinook, in 2010, it was 55,000, and that's what kind of spurred our efforts to get the council to put a cap on the pollock fishery in the Gulf, and now that's 25,000. So when they get to 25,000 Chinook observed, the fishery shuts down. No matter how much quota is left, they quit. And this was the subject of this motion that Commissioner Campbell has on the table. Would cap the rest of those fisheries. And it's a smaller amount. I don't know what the 10-year average is, but I know in 2010, and that's the number I'm using in the pollock fishery, was 9,000. So there's years where it's only 3,000, years it's 5,000. We would like to see a 5,000. And the reason why, that's the lowest of the alternative. The reason why is because when we advocated for the cap on the pollock fishery, we didn't get what we wanted. We got kind of a medium number. The 25,000, and that is higher than the 10-year average. So my question is, how does that add up to a meaningful reduction? If it's higher than the 10-year average, it's not really reducing bycatch, it's kind of legitimizing it in my way of looking at it. So I think I see your point, that how many fish can we get into the river so that our sport fishermen and set netters and commercial fishermen can enjoy more harvest out of the bycatch. And if a guy did the whole analysis of where these kings are going, what happened to them, most biologists can't tell you. We don't know all the forces that are conspiring against Chinook salmon. This is one that we actually have something on the table that we can speak out about. And I can't tell you how many of those 25,000 kings that we're saving now, or 30,000 kings that we're saving in the pollock fishery, are going to go in the Kenai River. But last year, sport fishermen only got 102 kings in the Kenai River. We did, as you know, get our escapement fine. Came in late, but we did get our king escapement in the late run fishery. It was scary, and it was declared a disaster, and the set netters were shut down, and the guides were shut down, and it was a $24 million impact to your community. And so that's why this is so important. If it brought another 100 fish to us, it could be double what we harvested last year in the recreational fishery in the Kenai. So every fish counts, is our point. And I can't tell you that how many are going to go there, but every fish counts. That's the point. And so.
You said you wanted the legislature to represent Alaskans. No one in the legislature, including the Senate, has introduced any resolutions to address bycatch this year. Exactly what would you like the legislature to do?
Well, that's what I'd like. I mean, you know, that's the prize at the end of this is, you know, if we could get the legislature to introduce a resolution asking the council to address this and to come up, you know, to just it would just be speaking out. Just like the thing is if any of you that ever been to the North Council knows, and I travel from Homer, and even if I drive my car, it doesn't cost that much, but it's still, it's time out of my day, or 2 days really, to go up there and come back. And you get 3 minutes. You get 3 minutes in front of the council to give your case. And it seems to me that it's a lot more efficient for the legislature who represents all of us to just say something to those guys and say, hey, the people have said this. This is what we want. There's not very many of Alaskans that will tell you that they're against reducing bycatch. It's a pretty simple concept.
Do you have any idea why no one in the legislature, including the Senate, has introduced any resolutions yet?
I don't think anybody's asked them to. And you know, this is something that I've heard from council members all over the country that belong to the 8 regional councils. They say, nobody ever came and asked us to do that. You know, we did this because nobody asked us to.
So Mr. Wheaton, he's looking my way, so I'll help with that a little bit. I have something on my desk that we're working on to help with this issue, and I'll be getting together with the House Fisheries Committee to hopefully have a House resolution as well.
Well, on that note, you said that the recent actions of the council reduced observer coverage. So somebody advocated for that. Who would have done that? Is it the outside fleet or is it Alaska?
I could guess. I mean, the point they made to the council was that our boats are being observed, but these boats aren't. And any of you that have ever been longlining know that there are things you can do on a longliner that are bad for the halibut fishery, for instance. I mean, you can rip their jaws out as you release them, you know, small fish that are under 32 inches, and that's not good. It's not bycatch, but it's just as bad. It's wasting a resource. But I don't really think that that's the big problem, you know. But that's where 15% or half of our observer coverage went, is the longliners. And to the trawlers under 60 feet. I've talked to the fleet out of King Cove that run the, you know, the Super 8s. You know, they're a 58-foot boat that seine, they're diversified fishermen, to me, small boat fishermen, out of King Cove and Sandpoint. They tell me that they don't catch a lot of kings with their boats. They don't have the power. Kings can outrun them. So they get in the net, they figure out something's wrong, and they get out. And, you know, so it's really the more powerful, larger boats that are doing it, mostly. The other thing is the King Cove Sandpoint fleets don't fish at night. You know, they lay up and sleep. They don't have big crews where they have 2 shifts. They just have 1 shift. So they lay up and, you know, they just heave to, pull the net in and sleep, and then they get back to it. Most kings are caught in the night fishery. And there's a lot of things these guys that, you know, they really do try to avoid it, and there's ways they can do it. And the guys out of King Cove and Sandpoint have some good ideas. But you know, it's a race for fish right now. And if any of you participate in a race for fish, sometimes you forget about the weather forecast and everything else, and you just go to get as much as you can because that's how you're going to get awarded your quota. And which, you know, is the wrong way of doing things, but that's what we're doing.
You mentioned that Alaska has 6 of the 11 council seats. Are you expecting one of those seats to oppose your position or a stronger bycatch?
Well, we got the $25,000, the cap on the pollock fishery, and you know it didn't. Some of the amendments went down, you might say, party lines that way, and so the Alaskans were outnumbered. But we were able to get the motion through because really, if you ask every councilman, they said, "How can I speak against or vote against reducing bycatch? I can't do it." They can't. I mean, really, they can't. And so we might not have got the number we wanted, but we got the motion. And we'll get this. We really want to advocate for that low number because The meaningful reduction is what we're asking.
It sounds like you don't think you have all the Alaskan votes, and could you define party lines in this case?
Well, I'm talking about the Washington, Oregon guys against the Alaskan guys. And so, and then you have the seat, you have the NIMP seat, so when I say party lines, I'm talking about states, as you know, a lot of these trawlers come from Newport, Oregon and Seattle, Washington. And so it's kind of like us against them sometimes in some of these amendments.
But you're not confident of all six Alaskan seats at this
point?
Oh,
I am.
You are?
Oh, yeah. I think we can count on that. I don't know about the lowest, the cap. I mean, we want to advocate for that low cap.
That's what I'm saying. You don't have six seats for the 5,000.
We don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Go ahead.
How does a trawler have to know if he's got a green tow before he gets it on deck? And is there some simple things that they could be doing that they're not?
They, electronics are very sophisticated nowadays. I mean, on my little charter boat, I can tell if it's a rockfish, a salmon, or a codfish under my boat, or a jellyfish. I can tell by the shape and the intensity. They have, I have something that's probably $3,000. They got $50,000 machines. I mean, they have cameras in their nets now. So they know, and they just know. There might be a school of pollock here, and a few of these over here, and you're after the pollock. And, it's a no catch, but they could do it. They're doing it in the very sea. And the other thing is they're working with excluders. And I'm not sure how successful these are. There's a few articles out there. And by the way, I should have said this earlier before people left. I have a bunch of handouts out on the table outside, programs that we do and some of the stuff. But there is an article about the excluders that they're testing one in the Gulf of Alaska right now. A Chinook excluder that evidently is some kind of a net. It's a panel that brings the fish up, and somehow I didn't really digest the whole thing yet. But anyway, there's rewards out there that the government offers to people to innovate some of these things. And so there's lots of things happening, and but they do have electronics that they know they could not. Once the race for fish is over, they'll be able to do it. And they've proven that in the Bering Sea. Now they own the quota. They can do it at their leisure, you might say. And they're able to work cooperatively. That's one way to do it. Now, right now, they don't. They don't say, hey, I just got a bunch of kings, stay out of this area. They don't talk with them together right now because everything's secret. So once the catch share program is developed and brought into being. And that's the other point about bycatch. That becomes part of the conversation when you talk about catch shares. You can craft a program to help reduce bycatch with incentives. And so we'd like to see that in this catch share discussion. We'd like to see community protections. We'd like to see crew protections. We'd like to see bycatch reduction. I think we can do, we'd like to see the catch share program not be in perpetuity, because that's how we've done all these other ones. And I'll bet you that there's lots of small boat young guys right now that would love to be able to go catch some halibut and diversify their portfolio that way. They can't afford to buy it at $30 a ton. And so I think if we would advocate to not advance catch share programs into perpetuity, I think it's a good idea. That answer your question about?
I just wonder if you know if juvenile king salmon are iconic or not, and if so, what's the state doing in terms of data on that?
I would say many, because like I said, I heard this in testimony at the North Council once. A trawl captain said, you guys realize these fish are only this big, and that's a juvenile king salmon. I catch a lot of juvenile king salmon actually in my fishery. What we call feeder kings, which are immature king salmon. They're not on their way to the river. They're just running around Kachemak Bay, getting bigger. And they're on their ocean run.
Well,
I don't know that we have data about that. I mean, that'd be an interesting question. I know that something that nobody ever talks about that does happen is huge scoops of scoops of forage fish get caught and dumped that they don't even bring on board. Herring, squid, hooligan. I've heard a huge, you know, well, I don't know if you guys remember the whole sea lion controversy, but sea lions, too, are bycatch. I mean, you know, so, and this is all part of the hotspot, cooperative, get out of that area thing, you know. I have a bad toe, don't come through here. You know, you ever get a chance during one of the pollock fisheries seasons, go over to Marine Exchange and ask them if you can watch their screen and ask them to, you know, show you the shellacoff strait. And it looks like a pack of wolves. There's trawler after trawler all running in the same line. And if the guy in the lead said, hey, I just caught a bunch of kings, they could veer off, they could move, they could just pick up and move. It's all part of efficiency, and I realize that. It's a race for fish, but that's the kind of stuff they have to do in order to avoid it. But I don't know about fish that go outside the mesh of the net. I don't know anything about them.
Well, I'm sure everybody's ready to get back to work if there are no other questions. I think that's a great presentation. Obviously an issue important to all Alaskans, and should be an issue there tonight, sport and commercial. All the rivers from Yukon to Southeast Rivers as well. So, a big hand for Mr. Wheaton, and I'm sure you'll be around for questions after if anyone has any.
Yeah. Well, Senator, and I have been both a commercial fisherman and a charter fisherman, and I've been a dip netter, and I've done it all, and this is my favorite issue because it has brought everybody together.
So, thanks for the great lunch.
You bet. Hook crab is okay.
It